Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
Well, Miles, we're thrilled to be joined in our third seat by a very talented producer, musician, streamer, esports commentator, one of the very first people to work on this show with us.
Yeah.
He's constantly streaming everything because he is that bitch on Twitch. Mm-hmm. He's our resident gaming expert. It's DJ Daniel Goodman!
Daniel! It's Leo before Zod!
DJ Daniel, a.k.a. East Coast Daniel, coming in live.
Beep, beep, I'm walking here.
Whoa. It's the man from New York, live in the mix.
Oh, no.
Yo. Z100, Daniel, how is it going, my guy?
Z100 in the house.
That was incredible.
That was good.
Yeah.
And several other New York-related things.
Is Z100 New York? I forget. Yes. I've lived in so many. I had a Z93 in Dayton, Ohio. Shout out to Z93. Wow. That was the cool stage when I was like, 12. But yeah, that brought me back, man.
Well, wait, so you're embracing, look, people who don't know, look, Daniel is West Coasting. You know, he's born and raised in L.A. And now he's relocated to the Big Apple. Big Apple. Mm-hmm. And now
we shouldn't give away. Actually, we shouldn't give away his location like that. That's fucked up.
Yeah, yeah.
He's in a big city in the East Coast.
You are in the Lower East Side, and you're on Houston.
Miles, we're not supposed to let our guests know that we have a tracker on them.
Yes, my bad.
Geolocating.
Wait, but you. I'm sorry. The thing that caught my attention is you're identifying as East Coast Daniel now, huh?
It's just kind of a joke because now that I've moved to the East Coast, my friends have said I'm more salty and they call me East Coast Daniel anytime I push back even a little bit in the Discord.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Like, that's East Coast Daniel coming out. I'm like, all right.
Salty ass. Always. Yeah.
Sorry, I had to wear a jacket today. All right.
I tried to wear a jacket today. Yeah, exactly. My feet became Tim's. It's crazy.
Quite literally.
Foot is a Tim now. It's an all black Air Force One.
Facts. Oh, yeah. I'm really selling drugs out here with my all black forces.
Ooh, there you go.
Catch me on the corner.
I don't know if you saw, there's this whole wave of like older people on social media who are discovering what the all like black on black Air Force One means. There's like a teacher, I saw this like principal TikTok, which is like, my students are like complimenting my sneaker game. And then some people just started being like, oh, you're trouble. And she's like, I thought I just had a cool sneaker on. And then I found out this is a goon shoe.
That's funny.
I was associated with referees and priests. Black on black sneaker.
Wear black on black sneakers? They're not wearing a leather shoe?
I mean, they like sometimes, most often, I'd say they wear the like
Etonic all black.
Yeah, medically designed all black sneaker. Yeah. You know, got like nurse shoes or whatever. But I've definitely seen. I remember growing up in the church. Mm-hmm. Thinking, like, why do priests and referees shop at the same shoe store?
How come you never see them together at the same time?
My priest is God's referee. You know what I'm saying? Dan, I don't think I have to tell you this now that you're on the East Coast, but stay prayed up, bro.
Stay prayed up, man. Stay prayed up, bro. Please, bro.
All right. Bro. Mm-hmm. Stay prayed
up. I doubled over in my chair at stay prayed up. That was
stay prayed up. I mean, that's like a week and a half old at this point, but
yeah,
no, that's fair. Yeah,
I'm rather than up. Eat, pray, love, stay prayed up.
Stay prayed up.
Thank you. What is something from your search history,
man? I will tell you, I'm such a nerd for skateboarding that almost my whole search history generally is filled with new skateboard information. That's maybe the most unrelatable thing an adult man can say, but that's just the reality of the situation.
No, I grew up in LA in the 90s and 2000s. So what do you mean? Like, you're looking at new just skaters, new decks?
Is the search
trucks?
Legitimately just skateboard information? Is that what you typed into your Google?
Refresh.
I should tell you, I am AI. I'm sorry. I'm always looking for, I always Google something/information. No, there's a new primitive video out I was watching. It's good. Couple of new, I just use skate video parts usually. So there's a new primitive video that just came out that I was watching.
What's like, okay, so I remember I used to watch a bunch of Toy Machine videos, Birdhouse Girl, all that in the 90s. I feel like it peaked with Yeah Right in 2003, that Spike Jonze one. Is there any, like, for someone who stopped watching skate videos then, what should I watch now?
Oh, man, such a huge... Well, let's see. Great question. I will actually say the last primitive video that came out, it's not bad. It's three new amps. We don't have a Spike Jonze today, I don't think.
Right.
There's nobody... Like, his shit's so creative and fun. Weekend, a company called Weekend, they put out some pretty good, like, sketch-based stuff.
Okay.
And then, like, they just came out with the last Static video, probably, which is this really good series by this dude, Josh Stewart, but he's been making videos since like the 90s. You might have seen like Static 3 or something. It had a good Bobby Puglio part, good Nate Broussard part. So he just put out probably the last of that. So that's a good, if you're a 90s dude, check out the newest Static video. I bet you'll like it.
Okay, yeah.
And these are videos of people like doing sick shit on skateboards.
The sickest shit, dude. Owen Wilson fucking killing it, bro. Or was it? I don't know.
Jack, no, I remember that back in the day. Yeah.
I think Right was like the video that like I would make like women I was dating watch. Like, yo, this is next level.
Don't know why you kept getting dumped at Chipotle.
At Chipotle, yeah. Next thing you know, hey, you want to meet up for lunch at Chipotle? Yeah, I got to go. Oh, but was it the part with the invisible deck? That shit was pretty cool, right? No?
Yeah. Look, and honestly, in your defense, that's not a bad way to say, like, hey, are you down? Do you like cool shit or no? I mean, it's a tasteful video, you know? Don't make them watch the whole thing, but show them something fun and be like, are we cool here?
Right. And then I started showing them CKY videos because there's technically was skating there. They're like, what? No, get out of here. Look, we had some swings and misses.
I remember being shown that like as a tape that like my friend had like gotten from somebody, the like Spike Jonze one, and then like a few years later when Jackass came out, being like, oh, they made a show out of this.
Oh, basically. Like the early ones.
Early ones.
Yeah, that was Right was like the peak.
Yeah, that was the fun though of that whole situation, was getting shit on a tape felt so underground and sick.
Yeah,
you felt you were getting a little treasure, you know. It's cool.
Exactly. Yeah, because that was like that was BitTorrent before BitTorrent. It was like, dude, I got a fucking ripped VHS copy of this thing that someone else paid for.
Yeah, sick.
I still ask teenagers to this day what if they've got any videotapes. And
what I love about videotapes, they had gears. Think about how old that is. Oh, they utilized gears. Yeah. That's like, you know, that feels like barely industrialized. You know?
Look like shit, those things. Like they really
loud
look
and rattly
like,
and broke.
Oh,
they
look
like they're like made out of like a disassembled fax machine or something, you know, like just like not technologically advanced in any way.
Yeah, yeah, and like the VCR decks were so like varied in performance. Like some, like if you got the cheap one, it's like you needed a rewinder, or else it would take like 28 minutes to rewind a video.
The race car rewinder.
Yeah, the Ferrari.
Whose dad was that? Whose dad was that into videotapes? Mm-hmm. It was like, we're gonna need a couple of those. Oh, actually,
dude, this shit makes me realize. Did you ever get yelled at for not rewinding a tape? I remember my mom would be like, "You're like, you didn't rewind the tape." We got like a VHS movie we rented at Blockbuster, and I watched it before. She's like, "Now I gotta rewind it and wait 6 minutes."
Yeah, I worked at Blockbuster, and that was a frustrating thing where we had to rewind them or whatever. It was just like, "Sir, could you please?" We had to ask people, which felt awful. It was like felt like you're, you know, talking to a 10-year-old, but it was an adult man, you know.
Yeah. I mean, what? Be kind, please rewind. Wasn't that like the fucking the mantra back then? Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Corporate, like, charity. They're just like, come on, please. We really could, our bottom line could really use this so that we have enough money to tell Netflix to go fuck themselves in 10 years. What's something, Jody, that you think is overrated?
This is not exactly overrated because I love it, but I was thinking about... This past weekend, I conned my daughter into alphabetizing my vinyl collection for me, which was great. It had been like two decades of mess. And then I was like, oh, this would be educational to her. And, you know, really, it was just finally getting around to doing it. So we sat down and we alphabetized my vinyl. And most of it is like stuff that I bought, you know, for like $2 a record, $3 a record, like many, many years ago, and have hauled around. And I love, you know, I love listening to it. But I've gotten a little bit into just buying stuff on vinyl, like a lot of people have lately. And it's really expensive. Like, it's crazy. And I was reading something yesterday about someone saying kind of like everyone that they know who collected vinyl for like the practice of it, you know, not necessarily for the fidelity of the audio, but like just it's fun to collect and it's good to, you know, it's nice to look at the artwork and it's nice to have a music collection. All those people, at least this person claimed, are moving to CDs now because you still get that act of collecting, but like you're not dropping $40 on a piece of vinyl. So I think vinyl is riding this weird, like maybe overrated curve or whatever. I think it's going to, I've started to feel that myself too. Like, oh, it's really fun to do this, but gosh, I cannot drop $25 to $40 every time I get a new piece of vinyl.
You don't think, because like I've thought about this myself, and the reason I've justified my vinyl collection is that if there's like the world's electronics go out, CDs are useless. My MP3s are useless, but I can still put my ear to a needle and move the record around and still hear the music or like use a gram. Like that, to me, it feels like the one apocalypse proof form of recorded music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you had to do that, just like hand rotate the record, I feel like that would get annoying for you.
I think there was a whole apocalypse, baby. In the director's cut of Station 11, there's like a 10-hour section where they're just listening to Nina Simone by hand cranking it around. It's really an incredible scene.
Heavy too, vinyl, right? At least compared to CDs heavy. And tapes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. I mean, sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
so people are skipping the tapes. Tapes, which is
right.
Is
well, that's the other
question,
the tapes. But I guess the tapes aren't as like interesting of an artifact, and they're not as stackable and so forth. And if you're really just in it to kind of like be able to flip through stuff or whatever and just kind of feel like you're collecting, then CDs might be the answer.
But I think like a lot of the hipper bands are putting out tapes now too. Like I've noticed that in LA where they're like, nah, dude, put our demo out on fucking cassette. But then it like it sounds like whatever. Go ahead. I mean, it's cool. I get it. You know, do what you want to do. Throwback.
No, it's
shit.
Funny. You go to Bandcamp and it's like you buy it and the options are basically like MP3, cassette, $50 vinyl that'll take 8 months to arrive because Taylor Swift gets to print all of her stuff before any indie band gets to print their
all
vinyl,
the world's
you know.
Vinyl is going to making.
No,
Taylor
it's true.
Swift
it's a huge shortage. It's kind of an incredible thing that all these big artists like leapfrog all the other folks who want to put stuff out on vinyl.
Is it the material that there's a, is it like helium, like one of those materials that secretly is just like, we have a finite limit of vinyl in a cave
I think it's
somewhere?
More the manufacturing facilities, but I'm not sure. But I think it's that, you know, it's, the, I mean, vinyl has taken off a ton, you know, in the last few years, but not to a place where like it's worth opening a vinyl factory in, you know, in Cleveland or whatever.
Sure.
Right. So there's still a limited manufacturing capability, but a really exponentially growing demand. And so then, yeah, it's created this whole thing where like Taylor Swift can put out all her back catalog on vinyl, you know, have it on shelves in a week, and indie bands need to wait like 8 months in line, you know.
Right.
Will there ever be music stores, like physical media stores again? Like not, you know, used record stores like we have now, but like will there be a future where there's a record store, just like it's not abnormal to see one? Do you guys think?
I think so. I mean, at least in New York, there's like, I mean, I was at the Rough Trade has like a proper record store here in New York, a flagship store. And it's like, looks like a, you know, a record store. It's a bunch of new vinyl. And actually there's a cassette player I noticed on for sale there too. But I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's going to be in every neighborhood or on every corner, but yeah.
Right. Oh, wow. It sounds like too, it's like because CDs, you know, became the norm, all the vinyl operations just started to cease to exist. And so you're left with like less plants, but also apparently there's a place that the Apollo Masters fire of February 2020 also had a huge setback on the vinyl industry. The only plant in North America equipped to manufacture vinyl lacquer discs, which is a key step in manufacturing process, had a 3-alarm fire that completely destroyed its facility.
That's crazy.
So, yeah. So now people are going to a manufacturer in Japan. Oh, yeah. So this shit is, yeah. Mm.
Wait, can I tell you my favorite little fact about vinyl records that I learned in just fairly recently? And I'm sure I will get corrected by the Reddit page if I screw this up. But it's something like this, that the like physical way that a needle interacts with the grooves on a record has a little bit to do with the instrumentation on the record, right? And it's basically that like higher pitch stuff has shallower or smaller grooves and more bass has bigger grooves. Mm-hmm. And moreover, as the needle and the arm gets closer to the middle of a record, it becomes a little more unstable just because of the physics of it or whatever. Which is all to say that throughout the like 60s, 70s, when they were pressing vinyl, it was very risky to put bass heavy songs on the towards the middle of a side of vinyl.
Right.
Because it could potentially like throw things off. So to me, you know, I've always been like, oh, I love all these Fleetwood Mac records where like the end of side one ends on this beautiful acoustic little piece. You know, what wonderful track listing or program. And it's actually just because of the like a physical problem that they have to do that. But it has like defined for me like so many of these records that they end on these little acoustic moments.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
They like put the bangers up top. Yeah.
Yeah. That basically. Yeah, yeah.
The Beatles' White Album like opens with Back in the USSR or whatever. And then. Amazing. What is something you think is underrated?
Underrated. Listen, I also knew this question was coming. I'm being in the moment, but you mentioned this off the top of the show. I was going to say Corn Chex, which is what I had for breakfast.
Oh, shit.
Okay. I think they're simple, they're basic, they're gluten-free, which is important to me, and they feel like little blankies on your tongue. The weave, the waffle weave of a Corn Chex.
That's unbelievable. Blankie, huh?
But you brought up Chex Mix. I know. Mix I was just thinking,
no, but I was like, whenever the sensation for me when in my mouth, it's not to let that thing chill on my tongue. It's like crush those little. I think this the crunch of it is one of the most satisfying ones of the cereals.
I take each and every one like a Eucharist wafer personally.
Yes. But even if they get a little too soggy, they're just sweet little blankets.
Yeah.
There is a kind of a light sweetness to Corn Chex also that, you know, it's not like
that's not by
a
mistake,
sweetened right? cereal. It's that's not by mistake.
That's
folks.
Not by mistake.
They made it taste good on purpose.
Yeah. Turns out there's 11. Engineers and scientists that know the perfect just ratio of bit. Crunch and sweetness. Yeah.
That is what our greatest scientists are doing. Like for a while there, they were working on the Manhattan Project. They moved to the moon landing. And then since then, they've just been making food taste as good as possible.
Yeah.
Junk
they're
food.
Like that. Yeah. It's a mushroom cloud of flavor, dude, in your mind. That's how they're like, yeah, that's how
the mouthfeel, though. The mouthfeel.
Exactly. Kaboom.
Yeah.
Maybe capitalism isn't all bad.
Right?
It's bringing us these snack foods.
Hey, your words, not ours. I'm glad we got you there, though. Glad we got you there.
Very good at inventing Baja Blast and, you know, giving Dorito, nacho cheese flavored Doritos, the great experience that they give you where you just can't stop eating them. It's bad for you in the long run, but, you know, it will kill you
but you'll have that like one moment of like vaguely dissatisfied bliss where you're like, I think I have to keep eating these forever. And science is like, we fucking
That's
did it,
you guys. Exactly what it is. Vaguely dissatisfied bliss. I'm going to try to remember this as I'm just housing snacks. Trader Joe's usually. Those guys, those scientists are on top of it.
Oh, maybe they know, this instead of death.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but the Trader Joe's snacks, some of them, like, they hit just enough that you're like, oh, these are okay, but not quite as good as other things sometimes. I'm like, you found the exact middle, Trader Joe's. I don't know how. But, yeah.
Their peanut butter filled pretzels are so much better than the ones that you get anywhere else. I got to say, Trader Joe's, really, they figured it out.
Yep. But they haven't figured out our phone number for those free peanut butter pretzels. So. You know, work on that. Work on that, TJ.
I am do have it out. I'm just waiting. And Trader Joe's is an unspoofable number. So I will believe you if you call me and say you're Trader Joe's.
Hello, I'm calling from Trader Joe's. I need your social security number in order to send you some free stuff. Oh, if not, God. I will transfer you to the CIA, who will arrest you.
The number just comes up, Joe Trader. It's me.
Yeah. What? Damn. Miles, big news.
Yeah, you're
back,
you pick up,
baby.
You just pick up the phone like this, Jack. Well, well, well. Been waiting for your call a long time,
you
dipshit.
Son of a bitch.
You know what? I'm sorry. I'm changing my underrated. Underrated is answering any phone call. Well, well, well,
well, well, well. Well.
Look who came crawling back.
I didn't have this on my bingo card, or maybe I did.
Oh, God. The bingo card. Fuck off with the bingo cards, please. By the way, I do feel like I did a bad job and rushed past the 3 a.m. Sopranos last episode Googling a little quickly. Did you find a theory? I feel like this is another, like, you know, the internet has wrought so many bad things, but one of the highlights was early days, Sopranos final episode, and then everybody immediately analyzes it, like every shot, like it's a Renaissance painting, which it kind of was. What did you find, anything new?
Not new, you know, maybe new to me because I hadn't really gone down that rabbit hole before. I have purposely not read anything by David Chase. I'm kind of saving that. I get weird like that. I'm like, I'm savoring. Yeah. Let me see what he has to say later. One theory I liked was that the members only jacket guy, I don't remember, Tony's at the diner with his family.
Yeah,
there's a guy that comes and sits down. And people were saying, listen, if he's really the assassin, he's not sitting there trying to expose his face and let everybody remember him. Like, why is he sitting at the diner counter for 5 minutes before all this happens so that people can recognize him? One theory that I thought was interesting was that he just happened to show up at that diner and was maybe a family member of somebody that Tony or Tony's people had whacked.
Yeah,
so it was kind of a spontaneous thing. He just saw an opportunity. So he like took a minute at the bar to gather his courage, went to the bathroom, came back, made it happen. I thought that was a great idea. I also had not considered, some people were saying that Carmela gave Tony up because she picked the restaurant. I hate to believe that, and I refuse to.
Hey, I mean, it's not like, he was the best partner. So, like, yeah, you know,
true.
I get that.
I know.
But you like to romanticize that sort of like mob marriage thing where it's like, yeah, till the fucking wheels come off.
I probably do. And I conflate, unfortunately, I conflate Tony Soprano with James Gandolfini, who you cannot help but love that actor.
Yeah.
Like his choices are unbelievable. He just has to be the most emotionally in tune person to be able to act like that. I just love him. So I know I'm supposed to hate Tony Soprano, but I kind of can't because of
that is
Jim's
the trick.
Sweet face. Yeah.
That's how they did it.
Yeah. The members only jacket, I think, is the most interesting, like sort of one where you really think about it, because that's a reference to Eugene Pontecorvo, who is the guy who like hung himself after he was trying to cash out and move to Florida. And like then the feds are like, dude, there's no way, like you have to stay in it. And remember, he was showing his wife, like there's that whole thing where he's like, this is the house for us, babe. And then he like his life tragically ends. And like a lot of people, that theory is like because Eugene was a members only wearing mobster, that it's like, this is the thing coming back. That's the more interesting one versus like,
yeah,
it could have been anybody.
I didn't rewatch the whole series, but now that you're saying that, I'm like remembering that happened.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
God damn. Miles is up on his literature.
Yep.
All right.
Never heard of, you know, these other weirdos like, I don't know, what's that one book you kept trying to get me to read, Jack, about the ravens or something?
Yeah, I'm always trying to get you to read Edgar Allan Poe.
One poem, which is a book now about the ravens.
That and Catcher in the Rye,
or
man.
Chaucer, whatever. Doc, miss me with that, dude.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about some of the shit that is happening in the zeitgeist. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
And we're back. And so some people are starting to say that Joe Biden is old, I guess.
No.
And
who?
I don't know.
Name him. Shame him.
I mean, Trump, I guess, like said something like that. No, this is the main point of discussion around the presidential race. If you had told me that these were going to be the two candidates 4 years ago, I would have told you that the main point of conversation would be this, you know, that they are both old, mathematically speaking, but the way the media is covering it seems to be like they want to catch them like physically stumbling. They want to like see them like stumble or like, oh, it looks like Biden pooped his pants. That's like it's some high school burn book ass shit. Like seems to be the like way that they're covering this, as opposed to like, what are the actual consequences of him?
What are we saying?
Having been raised in a different time with different challenges.
Yeah. I think it's like this narrow framing of people's discontent around the options for president. It basically has allowed, especially Joe Biden's allies, to respond with pretty like elementary defenses, which is like, he's actually very sharp. He is so detail oriented.
Yeah.
He has his head in the game. And like, while his age and I think cognition are definitely valid concerns for voters, I think it misses the larger point that many voters who are not senior citizens are actually trying to get at. It's that he is old and ideologically out of touch to deal with the challenges of our modern world. And I think when we just focus on the old part, all it has to be is like, dude, this dude does like 6 push-ups and eats a breakfast burrito. What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
And we're like, what we really need is like when it comes to things like climate change, you know, like, you know, many people have praised the Inflation Reduction Act for its ambitious goals, although many people would also argue that it was sort of the bare minimum given like what's at stake with our earth.
Well, and if Trump had won, I think we would have actually seen what the bare minimum was. But yeah,
bare minimum would have been like just everyone's rolling coal.
Accelerating like, in the opposite direction. Yeah.
Every school bus would be like legally obliged to
can
fucking
always be worse,
coal.
It turns out.
Yeah.
Mad Max vehicles or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Doubling down on making Morton Joe like part of his cabinet.
But right now, like the Biden administration, they just walked back their own emissions goals from the IRA in order to placate the big three automakers as GM, Ford, Stellantis. And was the issue that it was too ambitious? No, it's because these companies were just complaining about the speed at which they would have to modernize and not sell currently. Like if you look at what these companies offer, they're like gigantic, overpriced, inefficient vehicles. If you're talking like, is it about emissions? Is it about what's doing, what is best for the environment? Do we need to sort of rethink what kind of a car is best suited for this? And I think other people point at the polling in Michigan right now. It's looking pretty shit for Biden. So they figure, look, let's help out. Let's create some warm, fuzzy feelings in Michigan. Maybe that will help us get across the line in November. And so you're like kind of left looking like, so does Biden want to like modernize and improve the auto industry, or does he actually want to curb greenhouse gas emissions? Because I think most people who look at the climate crisis are like, we have to curb it's the fucking emissions we need to fucking get a handle on and how we look at these things. And if it's the latter, if it's about emissions, then shouldn't we be talking more about like fucking better mass transit and things like bike lanes? But like, again,
we can do both, man. We can do both.
But the thinking.
I used to have lunch with Strom Thurmond, my good friend.
Lee Iacocca.
And
yeah.
He and
exactly.
Lee.
Exactly.
I'm the great compromiser, man.
But like, he just wants to maintain the status quo of like ignoring the degradation of the planet. And like, that's fine. But like, sort of give us these warm, fuzzy feelings like, well, you know, maybe I get these car manufacturers to do this thing that sort of misses the point. And when you roll back the emissions, that sends a bad message to the younger people who will have to inherit this earth. And like another example, right? The genocide that's happening in Gaza, where people are facing starvation. Biden ignores the polling that shows that a significant majority of his own voters want an immediate ceasefire. He would rather, again, just preserve the old ways, blindly arming like a homicidal regime and keep arms manufacturers happy and groups like AIPAC from putting money against him. And meanwhile, this is causing him to hemorrhage support with like younger voters or the people that power political campaigns. Like you need young people to get behind your political campaign to have any kind of ground game or success there. And the reason why a lot of people are like put off by this, again, it's because we see that like this is the old way of doing things. And we see that what the status quo has given us, inequality, continued oppression of marginalized people, and a planet that is telling us every single day that we need to do something different fast. And the mainstream media just talks around these issues by just hammering home the like, this guy is old as shit talking point. And we're not like actually giving voice to the real issues that sort of underpin this observation. So if the conversation is he is not equipped to contend with the existential threats and understand that America in 2024 is actually quite diverse, then the defenses are going to have to actually talk about policy. So right now, it's just about, like I said, can he do a jump rope? Can he do jump rope really good? And
right.
does he remember who was in the monkeys? And if you want people to see someone as not being old, at the very least, you can show that with policy that shows, you know, what younger people than you are concerned with. And don't just be like, well, the other guy's fucking old, too, and he's a fascist. And that's right. What I think is driving a lot of things. Like, we have real fucking problems. So like, while a lot of people are talking about the age thing, I think the discussion misses that what that entails. It's that we are looking at all these, like, and we're in an omni-crisis, and we need real sort of substantive solutions that feel markedly different than what's going on. And I, you know, right now, the administration just announced like $1.2 billion in student debt relief will be forgiven for around 150,000 people. That is objectively a good thing. But that, those are the kinds of things that this administration can do that doesn't really require risking the kind of political cachet that like getting tough with oil and gas industries or the military industrial complex would. And I don't know, like when I think about it too, like with just looking at what the perspective is of this president or being or telling like people who are concerned with like Earth death or where our tax dollars are going or what we're enabling with our tax dollars, it just feels like he's like, look, it'll be okay. It'll be okay. You guys are just overblowing it. But like I was recently like with some older family members and they all said some version, like when we were talking about like, oh God, what's going on in this country? There's all some version of, well, I'm glad that I'm at the tail end of my life because I can't imagine how tough times are going to be for you and your kids.
Ooh,
you know what I mean?
Bad.
You know, and I feel Biden embodies this perspective. Like he is legislating as if he won't have to deal with the ramifications of his own policies and expects those of us that will, that it's not that bad. It's not that bad. And being really dismissive. And I think
it
that's
is
just
a
like,
thing. Yeah. Yeah. It is a thing that we see repeatedly with generations as they age out, and they're always despairing for the following generation. They're always like, your problems are intractable because we did our best and we're amazing. So this is fucked. Like, there's no way you're going to come up with something. The reality of the situation is the younger people are generally, you know, smarter and have more flexible minds and have like better perspective to attack these problems in new ways that the elderly aren't able to think about. And they're also not able to even like conceive that those possibilities are possible, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's just such a uniquely bad time for us to be stuck in this eddy of, you know, forward progress where it's a, you know, be in the same way that all the money is being trapped by the people who already have all the money, all the power is being trapped by all the people who have all the power up until the time that they're dead and can no longer continue to acquire power. It's just
right.
A system that is, you know, designed like there were very specific things in place. Like this was a known thing that like when you have this system, you have to guard against a gerontocracy. Like that's a very real problem. And
yeah,
slowly they just managed to kind of edit all of that stuff out of the narrative and out of history. So that people are now just like, hey, wait a second. How did these people get so old?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's also endemic of like the society generally moving left as it does, right? It's like the more we learn and the more we become educated. You know what I mean? Environmentalism right. was not really a thing like 150 years ago. And now sure. it's like a very serious concern, right? So it's like, so when the younger generation is just naturally more left, it's kind of horrifying that like what, when we see what we consider, what the government considers to be left is actually pretty fucking central, like you're saying, being sort of owned by big oil and the military industrial complex. It's like, somewhat yeah. horrifying.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, environmentalism was a thing with like, you know, native civilizations and stuff. They had a grasp on it, but it's certainly shifted very far right to a place of just like resource extraction.
They didn't have to contend like Western colonial like, right. earth exploitation or whatever. Yeah. So they just called that being alive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like being naturally right. imbalanced with stuff.
Yeah,
it's wild because like David Axelrod, you know, who is a political strategist, you know, responsible for getting Obama into office, and you know, a lot of people like, you know, what David Axelrod, like what can Joe Biden do, man, to help sort of defend against these attacks about his age or whatever? And he was just sort of like, yeah, just merely juxtapose his positions with Trump's.
Sure.
And it's like, you're not getting at the anxiety that people feel. It's like I feel increasingly unsafe in a world that's like prioritizing like militarism or earth degradation. And I have a fucking 1-year-old, and I'm even in my mind, I'm like, what the fuck does it look like for you? Like shit. I mean, I plan on being alive a little bit longer, so we're probably going to see some shit. But then what of like our kids and things like that? And I think Biden sort of has like this attitude of sort of like, I remember when he first took like an astronomy class and you learn that the earth is a star and then stars die and explode, and everyone's like, yeah, when the Earth, the sun is a star, like saying, like, you know, when the sun dies, it will fucking destroy it. Like, it will destroy the Earth too when that shit happens. And I'm like, oh my God, when's the fucking sun gonna die? And like, it's like fucking a billion years. I'm like, oh fuck, oh, fuck it then. Why the fuck do I care about that? Right. Like, that's kind of like the attitude that a lot of politicians have with a lot of these like huge things. We're like, I don't know, we can just keep kicking this can down the road and just sound like the warning bells about what will happen if we don't codify certain laws, or if you don't get a handle on curbing like emissions or inequality, without actually doing anything. Because to them, it's like so abstract, like the fallout, and they're insulated. So I don't know. I just think, like, for all the talk of like, it's not, I think it, again, I think just for people always saying it's the age, it just allows to skirt over like the real issues.
Right? What about the age? Is it just that he can't do push-ups well and you think he's going to fall? Like, there's a New York Times something, like some New York Times alert that popped up for me today that was like, what if Trump and Biden die? And that, again, if you're covering it from the perspective of like a horse race, it is certainly notable that one of the two horses that can win could die like during the course of the race. But yeah, it's mainly, that is the way that the, like back in 2004, when I was working at ABC News, they were having like this real internal crisis of consciousness about like, we are only covering this like it's a horse race. We never talk about policy. And, but they like continued to do that shit. Like they were like, and there's no way out, because that is the only way we really know how to talk about this in a way that makes sense as TV. You know,
yeah. Right. Yeah, like kind of the lowest common denominator. But like, look at his face. Isn't it old? Like although I do love this idea. If there was no like age cap on like professional sports, like that was, you were watching a baseball game and also there was a bunch of people who were so old they might pass away during the game. That would add a real level of intrigue.
Yeah.
Pitcher gets hit with a ball like right off the bat. They're like, oh no.
But again, Miles, I do have to push back here a little bit. You are only paying attention to the things that he's actually doing as president. You're not paying attention to the things that people say he is doing behind the scenes.
Yes,
behind the scenes, he is sharp and he is so mad.
And he thinks Netanyahu's an asshole.
He called Netanyahu an a-hole.
He's cool. Dude, he's cool in private, dude. He likes Trippy Red. You know what I mean? And he listens to all kinds. He was fucking with the last couple Playboy Cardi albums. He's actually really cool. But again, I think it's the whole point is to keep that debate there, because again, most of the mainstream media isn't really equipped to grapple with the policy failures of just America for the last 50 years in general anyway. So like, because anytime it is brought up, you're going to have a bunch of people who are like establishment politicians who are just gonna be like, this is fine. The police are great. It's okay. These are just noisy activists. And that's kind of like the message you get. But yeah, I think like as I experienced more spirited discussions around people of many generations talking about the presidential, and they're like, people got to get over the fact that he's old. It's like, it's not just that. I'm not just saying the fact that he's old, get him out of here. It's that this dude has no idea what life is going to look like for us, and he doesn't give a shit. And that's fucking frightening. And many of the people in office do not. And without a real sea change of that kind of thinking, things look very dire. And that's, I think, what merely people are asking for is like, can you at least wink at the fact that you know what things could look like? You know, like if we just keep maintaining this course and just.
Okay, again. You know, behind the scenes on Biden expert here.
Okay.
Uh-huh. He tried winking yesterday and his eyes started to bleed. So we're going to actually hold off on that one.
His eyelashes got caught and got tangled in each other. He couldn't open the eye anymore because he had too many sleepies.
They function effectively as spider webs at this point. So he can't close his eyes or else, you know.
They're like, no, that's just not the thing. Just help me understand about what we're going to do to make things better. Don't just be like, oh, this guy sucks too. And that's why I think there's increasing apathy and frustration around this, because like even when people feel like, can we talk about these issues? Like, nah, we can talk about how shitty Trump is, though.
Well, dude, and there's a whole, we are foundationally, and this is not unique, what I'm saying, but just foundationally addicted to oil and automobiles. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Thinking of what is required to actually like upend this entire foundational situation here with our dependency on just cars alone is like, it's policy. It's got to be policy change and structural consciousness change. Like people have to start to understand that there's going to have to be sacrifices. We have the tools to do it. Like we could work from home. We have the internet. We can get so much done.
Right.
You know what I mean? We just need to, but it's hard when the, you know, automotive industry is such like an aspect of the backbone in the American economy in certain states, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And or even just thinking about like how our justice system works or foreign policy. It's always like this patriarchal, like, well, someone's got to get fucking hit.
Yep.
Right. You know, and that extends to the militarism, that extends to why we see no real improvement in like how our justice system works. It's like, yeah, because it requires us to really, again, to abandon these fucking archaic ideas to move into something different. And yeah, and I think I'm sure obviously not everyone is a high value or high information voter. I was getting into high value male because you were talking about the manosphere.
Mm, kind of powerful sigmas. There. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But high information voters, like, but people do sort of in their bones feel like something has to fucking change on some level. And it's like when we aren't able to really get those ideas out or have those debates, yeah, we're sort of doomed to just stay in this cycle and then, you know, shaking our fists at this guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, it's one of the most consistent things you see across history is like, and it gets written out because in the same way that, you know, the people who are speculating on like the stock market, they don't a year from now air their like being completely wrong, you know, like that shit just like gets memory hold. One of the consistent tropes throughout history is the people who are like aging out, just having severe pessimism and cynicism about the future. And, you know, they're just too old to understand it, too old to like approach the problem with fresh eyes. And it's, we are at like a major crossroads for the species, like one of the most difficult crossroads of our species in generations. And we really, like, this is the worst possible time to have people who are just, like, cynical and pessimistic about our ability to solve these problems and to think about these problems.
Yeah, right. Completely. Because human beings are actually incredibly capable. Like, we're actually capable of doing incredible things if we're allowed to make those decisions for ourselves, you know?
The thing that makes me feel, like, sometimes, like, positive about the future is just, like, thinking right before World War II, as, you know, there's like this massive dust cloud devouring like the farmland in the middle of the country. There's the Great Depression. Hitler is rising. Like all of these horrible things are happening. And, you know, the world is going to like come together and like get through it and like build the future for, in a lot of ways, like the highway system, all these different like dams and all these various things. But it wasn't through listening to the very old people who were, you know, just like, fuck.
Right.
You had to get some new blood in there. So, All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about some good news. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zai Gang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
And we're back. And yeah, I think that's a really good point, Miles, about the like democratization of all these different forms of media. Like, I feel like with movies, we've seen like there was a lot of excitement around like, oh man, there's like all these sketch groups online and like that, you know, you're discovering new talent that way. And that, but I feel like that's like kind of gone away a little bit. But with gaming, I feel like I could see that just theoretically, not knowing much about the industry at all. But like, that's what is exciting to me is that like, as coding becomes more and more, you know, boosted by AI, like it feels like it's going to be easier and easier for people to like everybody to like come up with an idea, like an iteration on an existing game and just like make it happen, as opposed to with movies, I feel like it's still need like good performances, right? Yeah. You still need like these things that are hard to get. And like usually you need a lot of money. So like gaming is still this like writing based, idea based thing that I could see in the near future just becoming like more democratic than any of the other like major forms of media.
Yeah. I want to highlight one other thing about the gaming space right now that I think is really fun and is what kind of like adds to the, or what adds to the, what I started with about how it is so open to any kind of experience you want to have. There's lots of games that are developed these days that are developed by one person just because they're super excited about this one prospect. A very famous example is a game called Stardew Valley. Stardew Valley is developed by one person. I wrote down this person's name, Eric Concerned Aped Barone. Now, Eric made this one game himself. It's a farming simulator, but it's also slightly a relationship
Jack,
simulator.
Don't laugh because he's Italian. Wow.
Eric Concerned I was laughing Barone. At his pronunciation.
Yeah. Barone.
Concerned ape. Ape.
Concerned ape. Wait, and why is he Concerned Ape? That's not like
that's
the
just, that's just his right? username, Concerned Ape. It's kind of like Player Unknown. Yeah, yeah. I just can't remember Player Unknown's name.
It wasn't like an NFT play.
There you go, exactly. Stardew Valley, a game developed by one person, as of 2022, has sold 20 million copies. It's a game that struck a nerve with people who wanted to make a farming simulator type game. And it's just one person who's doing something they love at a time when a genre wasn't exactly like, it's that is not a game that was a drilled down version of a genre that was super, super popular at the moment. That was just something that struck people really strongly. Another genre of game or another developer who made a game that, again, was not something that people were looking for is a guy named Bennett Foddy. Now, he's made a web game you may have heard of called Quop, Q-W-O-P.
Yeah, the running and one?
The running one. He developed the running game where all you have is Q-W-O-P to control the knees and legs of a runner. And your point is to do a 100-meter dash. And it is so poorly controlled. It is so punishingly slow and stupid that people love doing it because it's just so hard to do. He made another game called Getting Over It, where you are a naked person sitting in a black kettle with a hammer. And your whole goal is to climb up a mountain by using your hammer to propel yourself up the mountain.
Right.
And the entire time, Bennett Foddy is narrating why you shouldn't be doing this and why it's frustrating and how punishing the whole process is. Where does that fit on the scale of these video games? How is that a battle royale like Fortnite? Fortnite? How is that like a farming simulator like Stardew Valley? It's not. This is a guy who has a passion for making these unique experiences, the ability to do so just by being a coder and with these gaming tools. I think he made it in Unity, which is another engine similar to the Unreal Engine, and just decided to make this game that has now sold millions of copies. It is another one of these
like
games.
Sounds like he also profoundly hates humankind.
You might say that.
Like a Larry David style outlook on
yes.
humanity.
Yes.
Thank you. What's wrong with you?
Fuck you.
Exactly.
You got something
it's a
better
great
to do?
Everybody should play it.
Dude, Quap is wild. I miss looking like Jordan Belfort on Quaaludes trying to run on that thing. Flop in, my man.
Yeah. It's just one of these things where it's like, you know, the world of video games almost feels, you know, less like TV and movies and almost like the world of music, where the tools to create it have become so easy to access that right. like while you have people who are trying to be the next Taylor Swift or trying to be the next Deadmau5 or trying to be the next Kendrick Lamar, you have people who are also just like, I made this weird song and all of a sudden that sound pops. All that you have people who are 100 gecs comparatively, or you have right. people who are just doing something that is complete, who's so different and completely off the wall. You're Sophies of the world. You're like, you're, you know, I don't know. Who's another like very peculiar or like unique artist right now? You get what I mean. My point is that like the tools are so easy to access and democratize.
John Mayer.
There you go.
People Lil Nas X was a good, originally was a version of that, right?
Yeah. But people who are taking these tools to make something that is unique to them, that is not necessarily being asked for at the time, but finding the right audience for it such that it becomes super popular, even if at the time it's like, what is this even for?
Sure.
Video games offer that lane, and that is something that makes me really excited about the future of video games. We just keep getting more stuff like that because the tools are so easy to access.
Right,
because
it's almost like, so like when someone makes a game, it's like, because I know music production and video production pretty well. It's like, because I remember if you wanted to make music, like it's like, did you have these old school production keyboards that had half right. the sounds that you wanted that you were hearing mm-hmm. on the thing.
Then,
yeah, exactly. Do you have that core? You got a Triton, you know? Like,
yeah,
do you
yeah,
have
exactly.
all that stuff.
Triton, exactly.
And then, but now you have more like effects packs that come out, like, you know, VSTs that give mm-hmm. you certain keyboard sounds that you didn't have before. Is that how people are kind of making games too? Like where these are sort of like modular and you can kind of be like, okay, I need a little bit of this. I need my version of Massive, for lack mm-hmm. of a better comparison, to making like electronic music. And so I can use that for the physics will be the game engine. And then I can use these other things. So it does feel like kind of like if you're savvy enough, there is a way to sort of like execute on like an idea because just like those elements are just there versus years before. It's like, well, do you have a 700 person team?
This is one of the last things I want to talk about. And it's one of the things that
Wait,
Jack
hold on. You're just
going to
cut the episode short? On your terms? Okay.
I don't know. I guess for about like an hour or so. But anyway.
No, go ahead. This is the last thing you're going to talk about. All right, Dad.
It's related.
This is the last fucking time I'm telling
this
you.
This is the last fucking time.
Listen up, fuckwit.
Another question that Jack posed was about Disney throwing money at Epic. I'm trying to see where it was in here because I saved a place for it. Cut all this. This is all bullshit. Here we go. Okay.
Are you reading through my notes?
No.
Cut all this. This is all bullshit. Justin, you know which one I'm talking about.
You know, let's just mute my channel.
This is me thinking. Okay. This is kind of going back to Fortnite and the Unreal Engine and all of that and what, you know, they're creating with Fortnite. Disney just threw $1.5 billion, which is about like a 4-5% stake in Epic. Why are they doing that?
That's a 4% stake in Epic is $1.5 billion.
It might be less, honestly. Yeah.
I don't know how much stuff is worth anymore. Oh my
god, they are an enormous company.
I know Shark Tank though.
Yeah.
And if you came out 1.5 billy for 4%, I'd be like, get the fuck out. Wow. Okay.
It's huge. it is a huge amount for not that big of a stake. But what Disney is getting out of that is this connection of their IP to things like Fortnite, the ability to use Unreal 5 to help make movies, and just like this connection into a world that people are already in all the time. Now, you've heard the term metaverse being thrown around so
much. We
love
it, don't we, folks?
And yeah. Like Facebook wanted to make one, blah, 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 wanted to make one. But they're
it's
not.
It's crazy that he got to it first. And now, like, for so many people, when they hear metaverse, they're like, they picture Mark Zuckerberg with no legs. Like Mark Zuckerberg's little avatar floating around with no legs.
Exactly.
And it's like, no, this is the future. This dude just like fucked it up in the mainstream.
He just completely fucked it up. But it is funny how the branding of that kind of came to him, because people don't think of Fortnite as the metaverse. But when you can be LeBron James or Sasuke from Naruto or Aloy from Horizon Zero Dawn or Peter Griffin from Family Guy as a character in Fortnite, that is the metaverse. When you and your friends are jumping into the Fortnite launcher and playing Fortnite, traditional Fortnite, Fortnite with no building, or a racing game developed by Psyonix, the people who make Rocket League, or they're playing a rhythm game developed by Harmonix, the people who made Rock Band, or they're making the survival crafting game in collaboration with Lego, all within one game, all within Fortnite. Fortnite is not trying to be like the best shooter. Fortnite is trying to be Nintendo. When your mom used to say, oh, are you playing that Nintendo? Fortnite is trying to be, oh, are you playing that Fortnite? Fortnite is so many different games, and it kind of is now. Not only that, like, Fortnite has their own tools built into the Fortnite engine for you to create your own game. Like, if you open up Fortnite, you'll see the main games: Fortnite, Fortnite No Build, Lego Fortnite, Rocket Racing, I can't remember what it's called. It's the rhythm game. It's like Main Stage or some shit like that. But then you have 15 or 16 other most popular user-created modes that you can just play that are completely different games, all built within the Fortnite engine. Like, Epic Games is using Fortnite as the tip of the spear for Unreal Engine 5 to show people what you can do with this tool.
Right. They are the people who are building those games making money? Like, are they taking...
No.
Can't you make money off of, like, a map?
You can make money off of... I'm actually not sure.
Okay.
Because
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Cut all this. This is bullshit, Justin. This is fucking bullshit.
Check that. Because if you can make money off a Fortnite map, that'd be interesting. Yeah. But I'm pretty sure they're just user generated. And it's like, if people are playing them, yes.
Well, no. The only reason I know this is because there is a player at Arsenal in the academy. He's not like in the main team yet. He's like a teenager named Ruel Walters. And he like before he got signed his professional contract, they're like, this kid was already making money on Fortnite because he made like a super popular map.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. I mean, like, if kids are making money off that, then that's even more awesome.
Yeah.
But
so they're the engine that makes all of this creation possible.
Exactly.
And they're making a big chunk of the money, but like the people who are going on there and being creative are able to like get some part of it.
He said in this article in The Athletic, it's like, because of the creator code or whatever.
Oh, that's different.
Oh, what's that?
That's different. Creator code is basically a way that you can say, this person brought me here. So if you enter a creator code when you're buying a skin on Fortnite, there's a little kickback to the creator who did that to you. So he's probably streaming on Twitch and said, use my creator code. And then when you buy skins, it's a kickback to me.
He said 250 million people played his map in 1 week.
That's fucking crazy. That's awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, that's so wild. I was just like, I knew there was like some way, but maybe not in the official way. Sorry, go on.
Right. No, but still, but that is a whole other thing. It's just these little tools that like Fortnite or Epic Games offers just within the Fortnite engine, where it's just like, oh yeah, use my code, type in my name so that you kick back to me who you like to just buy whatever skin you're going to buy.
Right.
And sometimes those skins are actual people, like I said, LeBron James, or even random streamers who are, part of the Fortnite community, such that me...
Could
you imagine the most boring skin ever?
I could.
But then you have people like The Weeknd, and then you have Peter Griffin, and then you have Pickle Rick. You just have all of this IP that is within the world of Fortnite so that you can be whoever you want in the world of Fortnite whenever you're playing any of those games.
Right.
Like, that is what they're... That is the world that they're creating, that they're fostering, that is like... It's
wild how, like, interchangeable it can be, because... There's so many times, like, I'll be playing a game, I'll be like, man, I wish there was just a Star Wars version of GTA.
Right.
Like, why can't I just have this look like Star Wars? And that game is coming out. Yep. But like with the flexibility of these other games, it's like, well, yeah, we can already just map this IP onto it. It's like, you want to play like Stewie versus PETA? Then exactly. Fine. Do it.
There's Darth Vader. There's a Darth Vader. There's a Luke Skywalker. There's an Anakin Skywalker skin in Fortnite.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so what's...
Have a lightsaber.
So it sounds like, obviously, there's ease in which that people are being able to make games, and that's, you know, AI has a certain hand into that. Is like the main risk just like the voice acting stuff? Because that's the one thing I've saw consistently from like voice acting people who are like, get the fuck away from my gigs with AI, because that is a huge, huge earner for voice actors.
It's a huge thing. And that was one of the things that I wrote down, is what really worries me about AI. You know, my fears is the less human actors. If the AI is going to take over, there's no way you can script for it. Right now, it's kind of a meme that if you're thorough, you'll talk to an NPC until you're just hearing the same prompts over and over. And that means that you've exhausted all of the dialogue options and what you're, you know, the person you're talking to. Like, there's only so much that you can script with a real person. But for an actor who would then be kind of prompting an AI voice, you're going in doing one day of work, maybe even only like an hour of work. And then that AI prompt is then generating an infinite amount of responses forever.
Right.
And that's scary. That's scary. That's taking the human element out of the interaction side of video games. And that's something that's like kind of, you know, it's a bridge we're going to have to cross. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be a contract that needs to be signed. It's going to need to be some sort of agreement that we have that is, you know, how we kind of control this forthcoming storm that is AI actors being part of video games, because that is real. That is very real what is going to happen.
Yeah, right.
It sounds like more and more, the more you describe it, the more it reminds me of like the media kind of content economy 10 years ago on the internet, where it's like it's very user driven, and like it's like all of these creative people who are somewhat anonymous are driving a lot of the innovation. Mm-hmm. And it's just like kind of a lot of them are doing it for the love of the game. And that turned out well, I think. Yeah. We, you know, now we have really great websites full of top tier user generated content. And no, it obviously went horribly wrong because nobody could like really figure out how to monetize that. Mm. And so they just like killed it, I guess.
But
so
I don't know. The difference
I was hopeful until I had that thought. I mean, I'm sure it'll just continue innovating. It is one of the ideas that was thrown out in reading up on AI is like, they're like, well, one of the problems we have with AI is that we don't have a body for this AI, this art, you know, ChatGPT to go walk out into the world and like start getting data and feedback, like learning with its body and with its ability to move around in space. Mm-hmm. So that was just another thing that occurred to me as we were talking. It was like, the NPC ChatGPT model, like in addition to being like a cool thing to play with, I could see that being prioritized by the companies, the AI companies, because that is something they're looking for, is like some mechanism for it to like go out and interact in the real world and like be able to kind of move around on its own.
And just get like free R&D.
It's in these games. It's like a character out in this like open world.
Exactly. Yeah, but this gonna come away thinking like they believed I was African American due to the outsized use of racial slurs I hear from young gamers. It's like I don't. That data set is gonna be fucking poison.
It's gonna be bad. It's gonna be bad.
Well, shit, Daniel. I feel like we could keep talking about this for weeks. But, thanks for coming on.
That's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Making me less afraid of all the gaming shit that I hear. I don't know what any of it means.
Jack, did you come out of this? Is there a game now that's obviously, because you're up on the Nintendo. We are
up on it.
Switch. Yeah. That bitch from Switch.
Switch. Exactly. The bitch with the Switch.
Yeah. No, I'm all of them. I mean, Power World, you know, I'm going to be all over Power this shit. Fortnite. Hell yeah, man.
Hell yeah.
Have your kids played games yet? Fortnite's scary to me because I feel like I just like go in and get shot in the head like immediately. But if there are all these derivations and like racing games and stuff like that is intriguing to me.
You'll be like, yeah, we'll all be playing together. And you're like, can we not do the battle? Or can we just do like the... The racing
just
one?
Guys.
The racing's good. Racing
and then
good.
I try and
it's
shoot
like Mario
you.
Kart.
LeBron!
Like, what? You can't shoot me in this. This is the racing one. You said specifically.
Hell yeah.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Right, gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.